Eddie, the Collegiate Sophomore. Chapter 4. The Indoor Track Season, Part 1. On the first day of practice of the indoor track season, the team meets in the indoor arena, wondering what will be in store for them today. Everyone on the team knows by now of the changes that were made to the coaching staff. To much of the team, however, Mr. Frazier is a black box. Most of the athletes on the team have had some interaction with him last semester, but many of the team members do not know what to expect having Mr. Frazier as their head coach. Eddie and the tribe are really looking forward to the upcoming track season. The tribe knows exactly what to expect now that Mr. Frazier is the head coach. The team is more prepared than ever, and with the new additions, the team will likely do better than last year. Sitting with the tribe on the bench today is Tessa. By an executive decision made by Provost Layton earlier this year, Tessa will get to run track during the winter season. With Dr. Paxton nowhere to be found and Dr. Braun now retired, Mr. Frazier has a lot of work ahead of him. Coach Herndon, who is part of the school's ROTC program, has stepped down from her coaching position. Coach Herndon only took the position because Dr. Braun was getting up there in years and needed some help until a suitable replacement for Dr. Jensen could be found. Truth be known, Coach Herndon didn't really want the job. She just took the job for some extra money. After her first year of working with the sprinters, Coach Herndon found that she really likes coaching. But she did a great job, and everyone knows it. And over the years, Coach Herndon's efforts were greatly appreciated by all. Mr. Frazier walks into the arena, joined by Dr. Bonomo and Provost Layton. Seeing the Provost walk in, the team members wonder if there is yet another controversy with the team, such as the one with Eddie's and Mark's locker last year. McCutcheon, in particular, is quite worried that he might again be in some kind of trouble. Silence falls over the arena as Mr. Frazier officially addresses the team for the first time as their head coach. Team members who have known Mr. Frazier for a long time know exactly what to expect. Others, however, are in the dark. Mr. Frazier begins his address, "Good morning. As you all know, I am George Frazier, and I have been appointed the head coach of this university's track team." The team applauds and cheers, making Mr. Frazier feel very welcome. Mr. Frazier continues, "Standing next to me is Dr. Bonomo, who will continue to be your field events coach. Standing on my other side is Provost Layton, who some of you may already know. Provost Layton will now be coaching this team, along with Dr. Bonomo and myself." The team cheers, making all the coaches feel welcome. The mystery behind Provost Layton's presence today is now revealed, far from the reasons anyone thought. Mr. Frazier continues, "Now, let's get down to business. I am going to start with the basics. There are only two events that are run in track. The two races are the 100-yard dash and the 440-yard dash." Every time Mr. Frazier makes this comment, the athletes can be heard making comments such as, "He's crazy," or "What is he talking about?" Today is no different. Mr. Frazier explains, "The 220-yard dash is nothing more than a prolonged 100-yard dash. The 40-yard dash is nothing more than a short 100-yard dash. The strategy is the same, which is to run as fast as you possibly can. If you can run one of those races, you can run the others." Increasing the energy behind his presentation as he moves along, Mr. Frazier, explaining the distance races, continues, "The 880-yard run, the mile, and any distance race less than 2 miles is just a 440-yard dash. The last 440 yards is where the race is won or lost. There is only one difference between any of the distance races. That difference is how much of a warm-up you must take before running the last 440 yards. Speaking of a few other events, Mr. Frazier explains, "And if you run the hurdles or the steeplechase, the only difference is a few obstacles are placed in your way. But they are only obstacles if you let them be obstacles. Mr. Fraser's explanation, while simple, makes a lot of sense to the team. Referring to Dr. Paxton, Mr. Fraser then adds, "And as far as the coaching around he goes, we recently got rid of one of those obstacles. Now, maybe the distance athletes will stand a chance at winning something." The distance athletes chuckle, easily relating to Mr. Fraser's innuendo. Lowering the boom, Mr. Fraser explains, "Now that we have an understanding of the two races we will be running, listen up. If any of you are willing to settle for second place, please get up, walk back into the locker room, clean out your locker, and go home." Clarifying himself, Mr. Fraser raises his voice and says, "I did not say that. If second place is the best you can do, then get up and leave. I intentionally used the word settle because once you settle, you'll lose. When you settle, the problem is not with your body, it is with your mind. If you're here to win, and I hope that all of you are, then settling and losing should not be an option. We are a team. It should not surprise you to know that your teammates want to win." Mr. Fraser continues, "And if you do come in second place, congratulations. You are the first loser. They give medals for first place, second place, and third place. Where in the world did that come from? Only one person wins the race. If you have ever read the Bible, in the book of 1 Corinthians, in chapter 9, verse 24, it states, 'Do you not know that those who run in a race all run, but only one receives the prize? Run in such a way that you win. Make no mistake about it. There is only one winner. I am going to say that again. There is only one winner. If you walk away with second place, learn something. Work harder, learn from the situation, and figure out what you need to change to do better next time." Mr. Fraser gives an example, telling the team, "All of you, I'm sure, know Eddie Boganskaya. When Eddie was a freshman in high school, Eddie won the silver medal in the 40-yard dash at the state invitational meet. After that, Eddie won the gold medal in the 40-yard dash for the next 3 years. And Eddie won the gold medal in the 100-yard dash at the spring state invitational meet for 4 consecutive years. But here's what you probably don't know. Eddie put all his gold medals in a box where he couldn't see them, except for the one he gave to Kathy. Left out on his dresser was his silver medal, where it served as a constant reminder to work harder. Second place was not acceptable to Eddie. Second place should not be acceptable to you either." Provost Layton is amazed at what she is hearing. She has heard hints and rumors of Mr. Fraser saying such things, which she now hears for herself. Provost Layton is not only impressed by what Mr. Fraser is saying to his team, but the energy behind what he says. But Mr. Fraser is not finished, but merely getting warmed up. Mr. Fraser continues, "For some of you, the reason that you do not win is because of that thing between your ears they call a brain. Someone has programmed you and told you that you can't win. And some of you actually believe it." Mr. Fraser then chuckles and tells everyone, "If any of you ran against my high school team, that person telling you that you can't win was probably Mark." The tribe laughs hysterically, knowing that Mr. Fraser is talking about McCutcheon and perhaps a few others. After the laughter dies down, Mr. Fraser continues, "You may have heard that you can't beat Eddie Boganskaya. You can't beat Axel Braden. You can't beat Gary Mitchell. Kathy is the fastest woman in the division. Can any of you hear Braden telling everyone before a race, 'I'm not so sure about this. I don't think I can win this time. These guys look faster than me, and they are going to kick my ass.' No. You can't. If you think that way, you will never win. The clock that's timing you, and the person running next to you is nothing compared to your own mental obstacles." Mr. Fraser, raising his voice, exclaims, "And the clock does not care one bit about your reputation, only your performance." Mr. Fraser starts citing a few examples, stating, "They said no one can run a mile faster than 4 minutes. Roger Bannister did not believe that for a minute. They said a man cannot run 100 meters in less than 10 seconds. Jim Hines did not believe that for a second. No one thought that the shot put could ever be thrown farther than 22 meters. That's a little over 72 feet for those of you who have never heard of the metric system. In 1976, Alexander Baryshnikov threw the shot put using the discus technique and did exactly what everyone said couldn't be done. And talking about technique, in 1968, Richard Fastbury won the gold medal at the Olympics by going over the high jump bar backwards, using the technique now known as the Fastbury flop. Everyone doubted his technique would be successful. Fastbury had no doubt at all. And today, nearly everyone is using his technique. What's stopping you? What's in your way? Whatever is in your way, if you want to win, you must get rid of it. Mr. Fraser then asks the athletes, I have a question for all of you. Who is the greatest boxer of all time? Everyone who answers, which is about half the team, replies, Muhammad Ali. Mr. Fraser informs the group, well, maybe he is, and maybe he isn't. But I can tell you this. Muhammad Ali has announced to the world that he's the greatest. Have you ever heard anyone dispute him? No. Anyone who steps into the ring with Muhammad Ali has already been pre-programmed to believe that they will be up against the greatest. And so have all of you. And if anyone believes Muhammad Ali is the greatest, when they step into the ring with him, at best, that makes them number two. They've already lost. When you believe that you are better, faster, and stronger than your opponent, then, and only then, will you win. Mr. Fraser then tells the group, the divisional meet is coming up. Is there any reason why this team can't walk away with the gold medal in every event? No. There's not. Looking around, Mr. Fraser adds, there's no reason why we can't walk away with all the medals. If you find you're up against someone who has beaten you in the past, do something. Mess with their head. Some psychological warfare just might be the difference between winning and losing. Giving the athletes an example, Mr. Fraser instructs them, when we get to the Colosseum for the divisional meet, start a rumor that the structure under the track has termites and it's weak. Tell them that it may collapse at any moment. Just do something. Mark smiles, whispering to Eddie, I'm going to do that. Eddie tells Mark, I'm going to tell them the water in the Colosseum tested positive for lead too. Mr. Fraser, hearing Eddie and Mark laughing and whispering, asks, okay, you guys. What's going on over there? I know this has got to be good. Mark tells Mr. Fraser, Eddie said he's going to tell the other teams that the water in the Colosseum tested positive for lead. Mr. Fraser exclaims, see that? That's exactly what I'm talking about. If they believe it, that's their problem. And, by the way, don't any of you fall for any of that shit. Don't be the sucker that someone else takes down. Changing the subject, Mr. Fraser tells the team, some of you are here at this university to get a degree in business, communications, exercise science, or some field that you plan to work in when you graduate. What do they teach you in your classrooms? Knowledge and problem solving. That's about it. And let me tell you this. None of what they teach you in the classroom will get you anywhere when you graduate. Mr. Fraser, now having the attention of the student athletes, Provost Layton and Dr. Bonamo, explains, there are only 3 degrees offered by any college or university. The 3 degrees are a degree in memorization, a degree in problem solving, or a degree in the arts. But many degrees are a combination of the three. A degree in history is nothing more than a degree in memorization. A math degree is no more than a problem-solving degree. If you have a math degree, when you graduate, you will be getting a job solving problems using math. And a degree in music is a degree in the arts. So, you sit in class and take tests for 4 years. Then, when you've passed enough tests, they give you a piece of paper that tells the world that you've passed enough tests. Mr. Fraser then raises his voice and exclaims, "Nothing they teach you at this university will determine whether you succeed when you get out." The arena becomes so silent that you can hear a pin drop. Mr. Fraser now has everyone's attention, including the complete attention of Provost Layton. Mr. Fraser then tells his team, "I am now going to tell you how to succeed at anything you do. Whether it is on the track, in the classroom, at your job when you graduate, the one principle leading to success is the same." Provost Layton, with all of her immense academic knowledge and experience, is at a complete loss as to what Mr. Fraser is about to say. So are the athletes, who are about to hear something that they will never hear in a classroom. Mr. Fraser exclaims, "Are you ready to hear it?" Most members of the team exclaim, "Yes." Mr. Fraser pauses, then exclaims, "The one, and only one, attribute that will determine your success at anything you attempt is you must attack the challenge you face with no fear. Did you get that? No fear. And that is a character attribute of everyone I've mentioned today. Roger Bannister. No fear. Jim Hines. No fear. Alexander Baryshnikov. No fear. Muhammad Ali. No fear. Richard Fastbury. No fear. And many of you sitting here today have no fear. Learning something herself today, Provost Layton claps her hands, with the entire team following suit. Provost Layton quickly realizes the difference between Dr. Braun and Mr. Fraser. Provost Layton quickly concludes that quadrupling Mr. Fraser's salary was definitely worth it. Mr. Fraser has more than four times the energy level of Dr. Braun and Dr. Paxton combined. It is hard for anyone not to understand why Eddie, Mitchell, and a few others have made mention that Mr. Fraser is the best coach around. It is now becoming evident to Provost Layton why. As Mr. Fraser continues with his address, sitting at the edge of the bleachers is Todd McCutcheon, who now realizes the difference between his high school coach, Mr. Ruff, and Mr. Fraser. It is no longer any secret how Northside High delivered blow after blow to Centerville year after year. Compared to Mr. Fraser, Mr. Ruff, the Centerville coach, is about as energetic as a half-dead snail. McCutcheon, even though his mind is weak, as Mark puts it, can clearly see where the energy of the Northside track team comes from. McCutcheon now feels cheated in a way, missing out on what could have made him the track star that he always wanted to be. Mr. Fraser announces, "Now, some of you men are going to run a mile in just a few minutes, and the rest of you are going to watch." Mr. Fraser then raises his voice and asks, "Who is my fastest miler here?" Mitchell stands up and exclaims, "That's me." Akinmola, remembering that he once beat Mitchell, stands up and, offering a different opinion, exclaims, "Not anymore. I beat you once, and I'll beat you again, my friend. Do you understand me?" Mr. Fraser exclaims, "That's it. No one else. Does every other miler here plan to be the first loser?" Stone and a few others stand up, taking the challenge. Mr. Fraser instructs the distance team, "I want my milers, and anyone else on the distance team who dares to challenge these guys, to get up off the bleachers and warm up. And leave your fear on the bench." While the runners warm up, Mr. Fraser continues, "Now we're going to see who's the fastest miler here. Some of you might just be surprised." Mr. Fraser then exclaims, "Braden, why are you sitting on the bleachers?" Braden replies, "You asked for the milers." Mr. Fraser tells Braden, "Get off your ass and warm up." Mr. Fraser chuckles, then informs Braden, "But don't worry. You won't have to run the mile in competition. I know you don't like running distance. You can take it easy during this race if you want." Mr. Fraser smiles and tells the rest of the team, "Now, we're going to see what happens. This is going to be interesting." Once the runners are warmed up, Mr. Fraser announces, "Axel Braden, please come up here." As he is taping two $100 bills to Braden's back, Mr. Fraser announces to the athletes in this race, I am taping $200 to Braden's back. Your job is to catch him and grab the bills. If you grab them, you can keep them. If you can't catch Braden and grab the bills, then Braden gets to keep them. But here's the catch. You are only eligible to grab the bills during the last quarter of a mile. Am I clear? The distance athletes indicate that they all understand and are now much more motivated than they were a few minutes ago. Mr. Fraser asks Braden, Now, I know you don't like running distance, but are you okay with this? Braden exclaims in a military tone, Yes, sir. Braden's energetic tone clearly indicates that he wants the $200. The tribe, seeing this drill a few times before, knows that this is going to be an awesome race. On the bench, Kathy tells Eddie, It looks like Braden is going to be $200 richer. Eddie replies, All four of them are going to break 4 minutes. The tribe is no longer sitting back and relaxed on the bleachers. At the edge of their seat, they are all discussing among themselves who will win. Before the race begins, the consensus is that Braden will win, for they all remember well when Braden won the mile last spring. But with $200 at stake, the money could be a game changer. Mr. Fraser tells the timekeepers, Please get me very accurate times on everyone. And get everyone's quarter mile split times, and please report them immediately to Mrs. Owens. Noticing that there are not enough timekeepers to record everyone's composite and split times, Mr. Fraser asks Kathy and Paula to assist timing this race, which they are glad to do. While the distance athletes are getting warmed up, Mr. Fraser informs the entire team, Kathy has been my team statistician at the high school for many years. Kathy knows the statistics of everyone on the high school team and the athletes going to state better than anyone. She even knows the statistics of every one of you. Turning toward the seasoned milers, Mr. Fraser exclaims, and Gary Mitchell, who expects to win this race, understands exactly how each one of you on the track runs. He knows more about how you run than you do yourself. Provost Layton has heard that Mitchell understands how her son, Daryl Stone, runs better than Stone does. Now, she hears it directly from Mr. Fraser. Mr. Fraser then exclaims, To win, you must know your competition. So, start paying close attention. Mr. Fraser then tells the runners in competition for the $200, Okay, everyone line up. And Braden gets the inside position. The rest of you, you're on your own. Mr. Fraser is watching carefully to see who fights for the better inside positions. Once they are in position, the starter announces, Set. The buzzer sounds, and Braden immediately takes the lead, setting the pace for the $200 mile. During the first quarter mile, Braden takes the lead, knowing that, if he burns out the other runners, he is $200 richer. Provost Layton mentions to Mr. Fraser, In all my days, George, I can't say I've seen a training exercise like this. Mr. Fraser explains, I don't know who is going to win, but I can tell you this. They are all going to run their best time so far this year. Now, we'll finally see what they can really do. Provost Layton clearly sees that this training exercise involves the mind just as much as the physical body. During the second quarter mile, everyone manages to keep pace with Braden, who is running a faster pace than the distance athletes are accustomed to. The runners are well aware that, if they fall too far behind, they will be out of contention for the $200. Right behind Braden is Stone, who is followed by Mitchell and Akinmola. A freshman, Julius Bailey, is slowly dropping behind, but nevertheless running a good time. And McCutcheon, now part of the distance team, is in last place. As the second lap comes to completion, Mrs. Owens informs Mr. Fraser that was the fastest first quarter mile this year for all the milers. During the third lap, Mitchell, Stone, and Akinmola are still right behind Braden. Braden is getting concerned for the simple reason that $200 are at stake. Mitchell, however, knows that Braden will begin sprinting somewhere just past the three-quarter mile mark. It's not hard for Akinmola or Stone to figure that out either. They've seen it happen before and expect that it will happen again. Provost Layton is somewhat worried because she had heard multiple times that, if Daryl runs too fast during the first quarter mile, he usually does not run a good race. Expressing her concern to Mr. Fraser, Provost Layton remarks, "They tell me that Daryl's time suffers if he runs the first lap too fast." Mr. Fraser laughs and replies, "That depends on how much he wants the $200. If I'm not mistaken, he will run a superb fourth quarter mile." As they approach the three-quarter mile mark, Braden, along with a few others, laps McCutcheon. Mr. Fraser tells Provost Layton, "Now, we're really going to see what Daryl has on his last lap." As expected, just past the three-quarter mile mark, Braden starts sprinting and begins to slowly separate himself from the pack. Mitchell, Akinmola, and Stone follow suit and chase down Braden. Braden steps up his pace, giving it all he has, and then some. With 220 yards remaining, everyone's eyes are glued on the finish. As they close in on the finish line, Braden still has a few yards over the seasoned distance men. With 110 yards to go, Braden begins to slow down, but not by intention. Mitchell, Stone, and Akinmola begin slowly gaining on Braden. A few yards from the finish, the three distance men fight for position to grab one of the Benjamin Franklins on Braden's shirt. At the finish, Braden edges out the others by a few feet, profiting $200 from today's monumental effort. Mr. Fraser, obviously impatient, exclaims, "What were their times? Did everyone see that? What's on the clock? What do we got?" Mr. Fraser is used to instant answers. At the university, however, the times are compiled and recorded before they are announced. Braden walks off his run, not caring in the least about his time. Braden takes both $100 bills off of his shirt and heads to the locker room to place them safely away in his locker, graciously thanking Mr. Fraser on the way. Returning just in time to hear the results, Braden hears Mr. Fraser exclaim, "Axel Braden ran the mile in 3:54.8. Can you believe it? Mitchell, 3:55.1. Stone, 3:55.3. Akinmola, 3:55.6. Bailey, 4:12.5. Can everyone believe it? Four of you just broke Roger Bannister's record from 1954. Four of you just ran qualifying times for the Olympic trials. The runners are all happy hearing their times, but very unhappy that they were not able to grab the $200 from Braden's back." After announcing the other runners' times, Mr. Fraser tells everyone to have a seat on the bleachers, as he and Provost Layton review the performance statistics. Grinning ear to ear, Mr. Fraser announces, "Stone, 3:55.3. That's your personal record. And your last quarter mile was your fastest quarter mile of all four of your laps. What's stopping you? $200 is nothing compared to the endorsement contracts you'll receive if you win an Olympic gold medal someday." Moving on, Mr. Fraser announces, "Mitchell, that was a great run. Last year, I understand you ran a 3:54.51. If you had drafted off of Stone instead of chasing down Braden for the first two or three laps, you might be $200 richer right now. Focus on running your own race next time." Moving on to Akinmola, Mr. Fraser announces, "Akinmola, you didn't think you can run that fast, did you? What was stopping you before? $200. Addressing the newcomer to the team, Mr. Fraser exclaims, "Bailey, you ran a 4:12.5. When we broke for Christmas break, you were running a 4:30. I wonder what happened." What happened was not only the $200 taped to Braden's back. Mr. Fraser's training protocols are also due much credit. Mr. Fraser concludes, "For the next few weeks, and maybe longer, I am suspending all distance training. I don't know what Paxton was doing, but it wasn't working. The problem with our distance team is lack of speed, not endurance. That is exactly why Braden beat every single one of you. The distance team will now be working with the sprinters. The team is now waiting for an explanation, which is coming. But before Mr. Fraser gives an explanation to his team, Mr. Fraser takes a moment to review each runner's recent statistics on Mrs. Owen's clipboard. Addressing the distance team, Mr. Fraser continues, according to the past year's statistics, Axel Braden's fastest quarter-mile time is 44.93 seconds. For the rest of you milers, your best quarter-mile time is in the mid to lower 50-second range, except for Mitchell. Endurance is not your problem. Top end is your problem. How are you going to run a 45-second quarter mile if you can only deliver a 54-second quarter mile? You can't. How are you going to deliver a 55-second quarter mile during the last lap of the mile if 55 seconds is your best quarter mile time? You can't. So, if you expect to win, you need to get your quarter mile time below 50 seconds. Mr. Fraser, delivering evidence of his claim, expounds, now, let me say this. Eric Johnson started off as a sprinter many years ago. He started running distance when he met Barbara Wingate, who many of you know. I can put Johnson in just about any race and expect him to place. Everyone here probably knows that by now. That's because Johnson can run the quarter mile in 46 seconds. Mr. Fraser grins and tells the distance team, but don't think you're getting out of your endurance training. You'll be doing that on your own in the evenings, between classes, and on the weekends. If you want to win, that's the price you're going to have to pay. Now, let's all get to work running the interval training drill. And remember, until further notice, everyone is now a sprinter. As the runners get moving on their drills, Provost Layton tells Mr. Fraser, George, I've only been here a half hour, and can tell you've already made a big difference. Mr. Fraser explains, I'm just doing what I've done for years. They are the ones doing the work. Being new to coaching, Provost Layton asks, so, what am I doing? Mr. Fraser replies, after they finish this drill, we'll move on to practicing relay handoffs. Most of the freshmen are new to the technique, so they'll need some instruction and a lot of practice. Provost Layton inquires, what technique are you using? Mr. Fraser replies, a non-visual non-verbal exchange with an up-sweep delivery. And the baton never changes hands. It's a bit smoother transition between runners of different heights. With the up-sweep delivery, the runner delivering the baton doesn't have to significantly alter their arm movement during the transition. And the runner receiving the baton doesn't have to reposition the baton in their hands. Provost Layton smiles, as she knows the technique well. After the team is worn out from the interval training drill, Mr. Fraser moves on to practicing relay handoffs. Everyone is familiar with the drill and quickly lines up and gets ready. The drill begins as Mr. Fraser explains the procedure to his new coach. Understanding exactly what Mr. Fraser is trying to accomplish, Provost Layton is quick to catch on. As the drill is underway, Mr. Fraser tells Provost Layton, watch this. Kathy is about to hand off to Erica. As Kathy approaches, the handoff is the most seamless transition anyone could imagine. Provost Layton comments, that was really smooth. Mr. Fraser explains, what I'm looking for now are those who need more help with the technique. For those who need some additional work, after the divisional meet, we'll arrange an extra half day each week for them to practice their handoffs. They've got to get this right. A lot of times the handoff is the difference between the gold medal and the silver medal. Watching an exchange, Provost Layton asks Mr. Fraser, who was that who just delivered the baton? Mr. Fraser replies, that's Karen Coy. She's a freshman on full scholarship. Provost Layton comments, I can see her problem. Mr. Fraser asks, what did you see? Provost Layton explains, her palm was facing down when she handed off. Her palm should have been facing to the right to get the upsweep motion correct. And, if I am correct, she's probably left-handed. Mr. Fraser tells Provost Layton, go ahead and pull her aside and see if you can help her. Then, pointing out Amanda Drake, Mr. Fraser tells Provost Layton, and when you're done with Karen, pull Amanda Drake aside and explain the technique to her as well. She needs a little work. Provost Layton calls Karen aside and explains the technique to her. Karen comments, in my high school, we were always watching the other runner when we handed off. Provost Layton explains, with the technique we use here, you'll run much faster times. There's no way you can be running your fastest if you're looking behind you. Provost Layton asks, by the way, are you left-handed? Karen answers, yeah, how did you know? Provost Layton replies, I saw it in your handoff. Provost Layton and Karen practice the technique a few times. With a little extra attention, Karen gets the technique perfected. Karen gets back into the queue, ready to follow through with what she just learned. Mr. Fraser and Provost Layton watch as the team continues the drill. Karen is up to receive the baton as Provost Layton watches closely. Provost Layton tells Mr. Fraser, here she goes. Oh, and she is left-handed. Mr. Fraser mentions, we'll just use that to our advantage, if we can. Karen receives the baton, sprinting 110 yards to the next transition zone. Handing off the baton, Karen's technique is a lot smoother. Karen looks over at Provost Layton, who smiles and gives her the thumbs up. Provost Layton then pulls Amanda Drake aside, helping her with the technique. With the handoff technique the university team uses, the baton never switches hands while the runner is running. Under the right circumstances, a left-handed runner can be a slight advantage in a relay race. Over time, however, everyone is expected to be equally proficient handing off and receiving either left-handed or right-handed. When practice is over, Provost Layton becomes aware that the team is running like a well-oiled machine. Daryl Stone ran the fastest mile of his life. Braden is $200 richer. Akinmola didn't know he can run so fast. Karen's and Amanda's handoff technique has improved. And, of most importance, the team, after hearing Mr. Fraser's introductory address, is much more motivated. The team heads to the locker rooms, more convinced than ever that they'll win, and win big, in the upcoming divisional meet. Outside of track, having built 7 dune buggies for a few other people, Eddie finally gets around to putting the finishing touches on his own dune buggy. Now that it is completed, Eddie decides to drive his dune buggy to practice one day, right before the divisional meet. Since the meet will be on this upcoming Saturday, the workouts on Thursday and Friday will be light. Driving onto campus, Eddie parks his dune buggy in his usual spot along with the rest of the tribe. Bobby B, driving up right behind Eddie, yells out, "So, you finally built one for yourself?" Eddie replies, "Yeah. Today is its first day on the road. Except for the wheel alignment, perhaps, which Eddie did earlier in the week." Bobby B comments, "It's gold." Eddie replies, "Yeah. Metallic gold to match all my medals. And the engine is a little different." Bobby B checks out Eddie's dune buggy, complimenting Eddie on his fine work. Kathy then drives up in her Porsche 914, and they all head in together. After they get dressed for practice, the tribe takes their usual seat on the bleachers. Bobby B asks Eddie, "So, you were saying your engine is different?" Eddie replies, "Yeah. I got the engine out of a Porsche 930. The engine is a 3.3-liter turbocharged engine, and it has 300 horsepower." Now having the attention of the tribe, Eddie adds, "I put in the bigger engine because I welded in a Class 3 trailer hitch, for towing stuff. And I reinforced the frame, so I had to add 50 pounds to the counterbalance weight." Offering his opinion, Mark adds, he built his dune buggy for towing stuff, so he doesn't have to call me anymore. Eddie laughs and replies, yeah, that's it, bro. Except for the fact that I don't have a trailer, so I'll still have to call you anyway. Mark replies, no, you don't. The trailer is in our storage yard. Just use it whenever you want. Eddie gives Mark a fist bump and tells him, thanks, bro. Is there anything you need towed? Seeing McCutcheon walking in, Mark gestures with his head toward McCutcheon and replies, yeah. Tow McCutcheon to the auto crusher. Eddie catches the drift, laughs, and replies, I bet he'll crunch instead of going thud like Mr. Crumb. Mr. Fraser, Dr. Bonomo, and Provost Layton walk in, and the athletes standing around take a seat on the bleachers. Mr. Fraser opens by saying, this Saturday is the divisional meet. Every single one of you are ready. Today, I want you to take a moment and think about where you personally need some work. We will then break into groups. You will join the group who needs work in the same area as you. That group will be your training partners for today. Giving the athletes some latitude regarding their workouts today surprises the team. Mr. Fraser's reasoning is that the athletes have a very good idea where they may need some improvement. Giving some suggestions, Mr. Fraser announces, if you feel you need to work on your relay handoffs, please meet in lane one of the main track. If you need to work on your start out of the blocks, please meet at the starting blocks on the sprinting track. If you are unsure of your block settings, please speak with myself, Coach Layton, Kathy, or Paula. If you want to practice drafting off your opponent or teammate, please do that on the outside lane of the track. But remember, the meet is in 2 days. So, please do not deplete your carbohydrate levels. And if you think you need work in another area, meet on the right side of the bleachers and discuss it. Mr. Fraser blows his whistle and tells the group to get working. Kathy asks the tribe, so, what are we going to work on? Mark replies, how about thinking of more ways to mess with the competition? Eddie asks Mark, what? Not ways to mess with McCutcheon. Mark replies, I wonder what Mr. Fraser would say if I just sat back on the bleachers and thought about ways to mess with people. Paula comments, maybe we all can do that. Knowing that Mark's suggestion is not going to fly, Eddie then mentions, I think I want to work on my starts. Mark agrees, telling Eddie, yeah, we can discuss messing with people at the starting line. The sprinters in the tribe decide to join Eddie and head to the starting line on the sprinting track. Mitchell, Akinmola, and Stone decide to practice drafting and strategy and are joined by most of the distance team. Bobby B decides to toss the shot put along with Fabio Cinquegrana and Pete Mendenhall rather than hitting the weight room today. And the freshmen Karen and Amanda work on perfecting their handoff techniques along with a few others. At the starting line, many of the other sprinters joined the tribe. Included among them is McCutcheon, who likely showed up at the blocks to irritate someone in the tribe. Eddie, Mark, Braden, and Davida start by having a competition to see who can get out of the blocks the fastest. Kathy, Paula, Erica, and Tessa will be the judges, as they will be up next. Mr. Fraser and Provost Layton join the sprinters first and will rotate through the groups. The guys get in the blocks, and the starter announces, on your marks. The judges watch intently as the starter announces, set. The buzzer sounds, and the four sprinters leave the blocks with lightning speed. After sprinting for 10 yards, they return to the starting line. The consensus among the four judges is that Eddie was the fastest out of the blocks, and Braden was out of the blocks last. The chiefest kicker was not too happy to hear that he was the last one out of the blocks. After seeing the start, Mr. Fraser yells out, hold up. Hold up. Mr. Fraser inverts the block settings for Braden's lane, having Braden start with his left foot in front instead of his right. Mr. Fraser tells the group to get back in the blocks and try it again. The four guys get in the blocks and the starter again announces, "On your marks," followed by, "Set." The buzzer sounds, and the four sprinters again leave the blocks, sprinting for 10 yards. Again, the consensus is that Eddie is out of the blocks first, but Braden is no longer noticeably the last one out. Braden asks, "Was I last this time?" Mr. Fraser replies, "No. You were out faster. That's a tenth or two off your time." Braden exclaims, "That's why they've all been beating me in the 40. Watch out. The chiefest kicker is now gonna be faster than ever." Braden has just learned that, by reversing his leg positions in the blocks, he is out of the blocks faster. But the story does not end there. Mr. Fraser continues, explaining to the sprinters, "There are two things that are important in the start. The first is getting out of the blocks as fast as possible. The second is getting up to your top speed as fast as possible. Before we make that change in competition though, we need to get some times on Braden." Mr. Fraser then tells Braden, "Take a short rest, and we'll do that in a few minutes. The time to the finish line is the real and only issue. Mr. Fraser will make the final determination of Braden's optimal block settings with his stopwatch." A few of the other sprinters attempt the drill. Mr. Fraser notices that a few of the sprinters do not appear to be setting the blocks properly. Mr. Fraser pulls Kathy aside, asking her, "Do you mind explaining to the group how the blocks are set? Some of the freshmen apparently have never learned." Kathy cheerfully replies, "Sure, no problem." Kathy has done this for Mr. Fraser for 7 years at the high school. No one explains the procedure better than Kathy. Truth be told, Kathy really enjoys teaching anything that has to do with track and field. Mr. Fraser tells the group, "Okay, everybody listen up. Some of you are not setting the blocks optimally. Kathy is going to explain how to properly set the blocks." Kathy tells Eddie, "Eddie, please come up here." Kathy announces to the group, "I am going to use Eddie as an example." The group stands around the starting line, with some of them about to learn something new. Using Eddie as an example, Kathy explains to the group, "The position of the front starting block should be 1.5 to 2 times the length of your shoe from the starting line. The position of the rear block depends on the height of the runner, which is typically going to be 2.5 feet to 3 feet from the starting line." Kathy initially positions Eddie in the blocks using Eddie's block settings. Kathy further explains, "The front leg should be bent to 90 degrees at your knee, and the back leg should be at 120 degrees when you are in the set position." Kathy then instructs Eddie, "Eddie, please now get into the set position." Eddie gets into the set position, as Kathy tells the group, "Notice that Eddie's front leg is bent at 90 degrees and his back leg is bent at 120 degrees. If they were not at the proper angle, I would make adjustments to the blocks until the angles are correct." As Kathy is explaining how to properly set the blocks, McCutcheon is having a vivid flashback to his sophomore year in high school. McCutcheon recalls Mark explaining to Kathy, Paula, and Tessa what the starting blocks are used for right before the first four-way meet of the year. McCutcheon thinks back to when the girls fumbled with the blocks, tripping over themselves when they began to run, as if it were their first time running. McCutcheon clearly recalls Mark shrugging his shoulders as he was commenting on the girls' abilities, telling McCutcheon, "What can I say?" Getting angrier by the minute, McCutcheon clearly sees how he and his high school team were thrown under the bus by Mark and the rest of the former Northside sprinters standing around. Kathy continues, explaining to the group, "The last thing that we want to make sure of is that Eddie's hands are 3 inches in front of his shoulders and 3 inches outside of his shoulders, which they are. And optimally, his waist should be bent to 45 degrees, which it is. And please do not forget to have your hands behind the starting line. Having done this for years, Eddie's hands are in the correct position." Finishing up, Kathy tells the group, "Once you've found your optimal position, look at the blocks and memorize your block settings." Mr. Fraser tells the group, "Okay. We're taking a short break from the drill, and everyone is going to find their optimal block settings. Cathy and Paula, along with Mr. Fraser and Provost Layton, work together as the sprinters get into the blocks one by one. Some of the runners already know their settings and are reassured that they are correct. Others never learned how to properly set the blocks and learn something new today. And McCutcheon, as angry as he can be, realizes that the block settings he has been using are not even remotely correct. Mr. Fraser moves on to the group working on their handoffs as Provost Layton continues to work with the sprinters. Provost Layton gets into the blocks a few times herself, delivering starts that are quicker than some of the freshmen and much faster than McCutcheon. The drill moves along well, with everyone feeling more confident about the meet this coming weekend. After everyone has discovered their optimal block settings, Provost Layton arranges a few time trials. Braden discovers that, with the revised block settings, he has trimmed a tenth of a second off his 40-yard dash time. Eddie and Mark realize that they are faster now than ever. Cathy and Paula learn that they are sure to take first place in their events for the fourth consecutive year. McCutcheon's deficiencies again become quite evident, as Mark was quick to point out a few times during today's training session. Mr. Fraser blows his whistle, signaling the end of practice for today. He tells the team to arrive at the arena at 8 a.m. tomorrow instead of 7 a.m. and to not dress for practice. Tomorrow, Mr. Fraser will go over the final event assignments. The team heads to the locker rooms with a renewed confidence going into the divisional meet.